as you look back over your life, can you pinpoint a project or projects that gave you the most satisfaction?
Well, there are certain public projects that I'm very proud of. Probably in a construction manner, the port would be the one, even though there are many, many others who had a lot more leadership responsibilities in that than I did. You have to remember the bond issue that the city passed for the port was in the Maxwell administration. I always had great respect for Jim Maxwell, as well as my successor, Jim Hughley, because both of them were very innovative in bringing new things. They were not afraid to try something new. Maxwell developed a lot of the city-county associations that we have today, our library system, our health system, the planning commission. All of those are city-county efforts. We see today a lot of problems between the city and the county because of that lack of camaraderie or something that existed in those earlier days. Jim Hughley did the same thing. He was able to establish new things. We had our Model Cities program that attempted at least to do a lot of development in North Tulsa with the black community. We gave a lot of representation to minorities through committees and new organizations and new ideas that at least surfaced some of the important racial divisions that we had. Hughley started the Tulsa Housing Authority, for instance, which to me has been one of the most important elements of the city development over the years in taking care of the need for low-income assisted housing.
Well, those were all big building years, weren't they? And exciting. What do you think was one of your best traits? How do you view yourself?
First of all, I think in the commission form itself, it is a coalition building form of government. The mayor was the chief executive of the city, but he only had a limited number of departments, mostly the executive departments. All of the operational departments under that form were under the commissioners, the four commissioners that were elected, and the city auditor. So in order for the mayor to advance an idea or a new program, while the mayor controls the formation of the budget, so to speak, he or she would not have anything to do with ordering out street crews or picking up things for the waste disposal or doing those things. The mayor had to coalesce support from among the commission elements. That meant that you had to be a coalition builder for your ideas. My theory always was get the best ideas you can from the best people and advance them the best way you can. I lost some things. I lost some bond issues. I lost a project to get a low-security prison in Tulsa, which I wanted very badly, because I knew that these prisoners coming out of jail were all coming back to our town. Why shouldn't we have them here where we can give them vocational training and more attention so they're more rehabilitated? But we lost that in a big way here in Tulsa.
People were afraid?
They're afraid of citing it. It's the same old thing, not in my backyard, you know, anywhere else. So I remember the good things we did a lot more good things than the things we failed on.
As you talked about the river and you talked about the Low River Dam and that was being talked about in the 60s, are you surprised that we are sitting here today, right now, trying to fund a low water dam? Here we are in 2009. That's got to be a surprise to you.
Well, it is because it's just taken too long for reasons I wouldn't necessarily opine on at the time. I think we missed an opportunity when we lost the vote in 07. That spilled milk, so to speak, so let's go on to the next one and hope that we can get funding for some development. Meanwhile, I'm very pleased with what's taking place along the bank, being funded through donations like from the Kaiser Family Foundation or from Quick Trip, their development. There's still a lot of things that can be done with respect to riverbank development without having the low water dams there.
After you left office as the mayor of City of Tulsa, what did you do then?
Well, I just went back into my private business. I do a lot of work with our family. Since my parents died, we have a couple of trusts that I'm a major factor in overseeing. So that's my business today. I'm still in the oil and gas ventures. From a personal standpoint, I still try and keep a hand in some of the civic jobs as a volunteer, particularly with St. John Health System and with some of the Catholic schools that I associate with.
Notre Dame, there is a facility there named in the honor of your family.
Yes, there's a LaFortune Student Center at Notre Dame that my mother and dad funded. It was the renovation of a very old building on the campus, but almost right next to the main Golden Dome administration building at the school. They did a renovation of the older classroom building, and then in the middle 80s, our family, all of our family members, participated in a major expansion of that building to the status it has today as a LaFortune Student Center. So it's very much in use, mainly for student activities and for campus restaurants for the students and meeting places.
Describe your father to us.
My dad was very, very much indoctrinated into work and responsibility. There's very much a self-discipline about how he conducted his own life. He's very compassionate. He always had great sensitivity to people who worked, especially just normal laborers that he would see or encounter. He could talk to anybody. He could talk to the most important person in the country, a president, as he did with President Eisenhower when he was serving in his administration. He could talk to the normal day laborer working at the park. He used to go out to LaFortune Park a lot. He'd go out there almost every week. He'd walk around. He might sit down on a bench. Some golfer would come by or somebody would come by. He wouldn't tell them who he is. He would engage him in a conversation. Well, how'd your day go? What do you like about the park? Did you see anything wrong out here? Something that might need fixing? And then he'd get their ideas. If he did, he wouldn't do anything about it. Just go talk to the superintendent and say, you better take a look at this. This is going to need some help. Without a doubt, the park was the golden part of his life. Even after the initial development, remember that he built the three-par golf course as an addition. He built some of the tennis courts as an addition, then the running track around it and the playground that went with it. All of those things came later after the initial development. He never, unfortunately, saw the part on the 51st and Hudson corner, nor would he have seen the newer development of the tennis courts, which would please him greatly.
It must give you an enormous sense of pride to drive up Yale, and particularly on the weekends and Sunday afternoon. You see all these families playing, and you can see that they're having family get-togethers and cooking out and all. That's just got to give you a lot of pride and pleasure.
Well, I've seen a lot of parks around the country and cities I visit. I don't think there's a more complete small urban park than LaFortune Park. It's unique. You think of all the different activities, all the things that are going on there at the same time. It's just a gem among park systems.
Yeah. As students listen to this interview, any advice for life, for careers, for public service, anything you'd like to impart to them?
Well, I think today especially, we need young people who are interested in public service. And that's why I was so pleased to see my grandson run for city office. He's had probably a political bent since he got out of college because he went to work for Senator Nichols for 5 years, then he worked for Senator Coburn for a year or two. He's always had an interest that's kind of in his blood. Well, it goes back to his family, his great-great-grandfather being a mayor. So I'm really proud of that. But more people need to have an interest and not a scorn for political life. Politicians are needed in our country, good ones. If the good people don't step up, the ones who aren't that capable will. And we'll just have, so to speak, a vacuum where we need new leadership. I might add, I think young people need to feel a sense of responsibility in everything they do. They need to get through high school without getting in troubles. They need to watch the people they run around with. They need to pick and choose good friends. It's probably one of the most important things that I think I've had. I've always had good friends. I've been proud of them and not ashamed to associate with them. And the other thing is to keep a sense of integrity about your life. Ethics today have been under severe stress, especially among our top corporate leaders in the country and among a lot of our political leaders. So integrity is probably the most important thing that you ought to be thinking about when you take on a job or a responsibility.
In your life, would you look back on certain individuals that you look to? Obviously, your father would be one of them, but anybody else outside the family as mentors?
Obviously, I would have run across or worked for people that I respect. A lot of my teachers, in particular at high school level, and some even at the college level, that I remember as kind of forming my outlooks and my attitudes. I would say that's particularly true of the priests I had at Cashel Hall and the sisters I had even in grade school at Marquette, sisters of the Benedictine community here. Those two orders, Augustinians and Benedictines, have a very wonderful attitude about their life, and I think they impart that to you when they teach you.
And you've been very active in the Catholic Church.
That's one of the reasons that I think I've stayed so active is because of the religious influences from my teachers.
Are there any names at Marquette and in Cassia, students that you went to school with that grew up in Tulsa that we might recognize that you stayed in touch with?
Well, Father Theodore Tack, who is presently stationed at Cassia Hall, was a classmate of mine. He had a vocation to the priesthood. He went right into the seminary out of high school. He later lived in Rome for about 29 years as a priest and became the superior provincial of the Augustinian order worldwide, over 3,000 Augustinians. And he kept that job for 12 years. He and I were obviously contemporaries in high school. We were very close friends through grade school and high school. We still maintain a close friendship. He's had a very favorable influence on my life, obviously, because of his dedication to his own vocation.
Names of Cassia Hall students that stayed in Tulsa and got involved locally that you can think of?
Well, Bill LaFortune went to Cassia. Frank Keating went to Cassia. I'm sure there are others who've been very prominent in their own fields.
So then overall, as you're remembered, you could be remembered as what?
Good old Bob. Good old Bob. You know, I've never wanted to get a lot of recognition. I don't think that's necessary. People know what I've done. I see it every day. I don't go almost anywhere in Oklahoma that I don't see somebody that remembers my face or my name or some association with the LaFortune family. That's a proud moment for me, especially when I'm with some of my grandchildren and they see somebody just say, "Hey, Bob, isn't that you?" Or, you know, "I remember you. We met 20 years ago," or somebody will come up and say, "Hey, Bob, remember I worked in your campaign?" And I say, "My campaign? That's 30 years ago." Those are proud moments, obviously, and not because you did anything about it. It's just that they have a favorable impression of what you did.
Yeah. Well, thank you for this time. Appreciate it very much. Very nice of you.
Covered a lot. I think what you've done is very good.